Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Christine Payne will be giving us an update on CFPDP. So what's the latest with the foundation?
Lots going on at the foundation always. The Canadian Foundation for Physically Disabled Persons is always busy, shining a spotlight basically on the lives and accomplishments of people with disabilities, while we're also supporting ongoing efforts for inclusion and equality. So in February, for example, we had the 38th annual Great Valentine Gala. This is the premier fundraiser for CFPDP each year, and it's also the cornerstone that the foundation was built upon back in 1985. We were virtual again in 2022 because of the challenges with the pandemic, but we are excited for it to return to an in-person event for 2023. And so the funds from the gala helped they help the disability community in a number of ways. So just, as examples, they help us to create awareness of the abilities of people with disabilities. And this is done across government, the general public, and business communities. They help CFPDP to advocate for increased professional opportunities for disabled Canadians to be appointed to corporate boards. There are educational efforts around diversity and inclusion, of course, with a focus on disability. And then a number of activities like the various awards handed out by the foundation throughout the year to recognize the achievements of people with disabilities. Now, some of these awards, for example, are handed out at the Great Valentine Gala. That would be the CFPDP Corporate Award, the Honorable David C. Onley Award, and the King Clancy Award. But then, of course, there is the Canadian Disability Hall of Fame, which honors three inductees every year, and 2022 is the 29th year for the Canadian Disability Hall of Fame. If it's okay, I'll let your listeners know that nominations are open right now, and they're open until Friday, May the 20th, and there are three categories that people can be nominated in: builder, achiever, and athlete. And there is more information on the CFPDP website, which is cfpdp.com. So, certainly, just to give some quick information, the builder category is for people who have made extraordinary contributions to enhance the lives of people with physical disabilities. And this could be in a number of areas. It could be medical research, it could be public service, or even in the nonprofit sector, just as examples. In the achiever category, inductees will have worked to either increase public awareness about people with physical disabilities or perhaps to have increased opportunities for them in a variety of areas. It could be housing, could be sports, could be education, could be employment. And then anybody who is also an inspiration to other people who have physical disabilities would also fall under this category. And then the athlete category, I think, is self-explanatory. Physical disabilities, athletes with physical disabilities who have excelled as athletes. So again, definitely encourage people to nominate. And another important note is that the nomination packages are carried over for two additional years. So if you nominate somebody and they aren't inducted the first year, that package is automatically considered for two more years. So, and you can support the person you nominated by, like, sending in additional letters of support or even a fresh nomination package. So that's something that we encourage people to do as well, to support the people.
How do you go about reaching out to the disability population to let them know about your good works in the community?
Well, there's a number of things that we do. I mean, obviously, radio interviews just like this one. We have a bunch of public awareness activities that we participate in. We have public service announcements that are graciously run by our media partners throughout the year. We have social media, you know, just a variety of ways that we're reaching out to the community. Because I think there probably are people with disabilities who are not familiar with the work that CFPDP is doing, with the important work that CFPDP is doing. So we definitely want to make sure that as many people as possible, you know, can learn about what we're doing and, you know, work with us as we're changing the way that Canadians view disability.
So in your time with the foundation, has there been any individual success moment that really stands out for you?
That's a great question. And when the Canadian Foundation for Physically Disabled Persons, back in 1996, when it organized the Why Not Marathon, and what that was is a Paralympic torch run from coast to coast leading up to the Paralympic Games in Atlanta. And, you know, just as background, you know, it began in late May when the Eternal Flame of Hope was lit outside of Metro Hall in Toronto. That's the same place where the Canadian Disability Hall of Fame is located. And the Eternal Flame of Hope remains lit to this day. And from there were two specially designed torches that were brought to flame, and then they were flown to separate sides of Canada. So one went to St. John's, Newfoundland. The other went to Victoria, British Columbia. And the torches spent 2 months making their way through all 10 Canadian provinces. And there were thousands of people who participated in this. There were torchbearers, there were fundraisers, there were volunteers, there were onlookers. And then on the 24th of February that year, the torches came together again at Metro Hall, and then they headed to the Summer Games in Atlanta. So, I mean, this goes back kind of to your earlier question about, you know, what are some of the ways that CFPDP has gotten the word out about what it does and, you know, the important work it's doing to change the way that Canadians view disability. Well, I mean, this Why Not Marathon exposed the Paralympics and Paralympic athletes to media, politicians, the public in general. It raised the profile for Paralympics in Canada within, you know, many, many folds, just within a period of 2 months. And, you know, more important than the money that was raised, because $2 million was raised to fund initiatives in local communities, there were thousands of media stories. I mean, almost every radio and TV station covered the event, as did the newspapers. You know, the estimate is that more than 75% of the Canadian population was touched by this marathon of this Why Not Marathon. And it traveled through, like, you know, something like 700 communities. There were 8,000 torchbearers. There were 150,000 runners. There were 17,000 sponsors. And then, you know, on top of that, 12,000 Rotarians, 300 Rotary clubs, and 200 Paralympic athletes. You know, the run stopped at, you know, schools, at camps, at hospitals. You know, it was inspiring tens of thousands of children. You know, our country's top politicians at the time, you know, participated, and Prime Minister Jean Chrétien and Deputy Prime Minister Sheila Copps met the marathon in Ottawa, and even Bill Clinton, the U.S. president, sent a letter of support. So, you know, the entire country took part in so many ways. You know, they walked, they ran, they rode bicycles, horses, motorcycles, golf carts, scooters, and it's something that the founder of CFPDP, Honorable Vim Kochhar, really remembers with awe and pride, and it's a really, really proud part of the foundation's history, and ultimately significantly raised the profile of Canadian Paralympians right across the country from coast to coast.
So If you could send any message about the need for equal inclusion and more supporting events like that, what would you say?
Inclusion is very important, obviously. You're always going to encounter myths out there, but I think one of the things that CFPDP has always emphasized is that people with disabilities are highly capable. You know, they're business leaders, they're change makers, they're elite athletes, you know, they're contributing to the media, they're contributing to society in so many ways. It's not surprising because, you know, a person with a disability can bring, at times, a different perspective because of their lived experiences. I mean, and think of how positive this can be, even in a business environment that's seeking to market to diverse consumer groups. Think of, you know, we just touched on the Paralympians, the elite athletes who represent Canada so proudly. You know, they did it in Tokyo, and they did it more recently in Beijing. I mean, Canada was third in the world in the medal standings in Beijing. You know, that's incredible. It's worth celebrating. And one of the things that Honorable Kochar has repeatedly said, and that the foundation believes wholeheartedly, is that Paralympic gold is as good as Olympic gold. You know, and these are just some of the examples of the incredible things that people with disabilities are achieving on a daily basis. And we're excited by the future that CFPDP is helping to shape. That future is one of full inclusion for people with disabilities of all ages living across Canada from coast to coast and around the world.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Cheryl Petrick from the Canadian MPN Network. So, can you tell me a little bit about your work with MPN?
So certainly. So the Canadian MPN Research Foundation was founded in 2017. The reason it was founded was because my late husband was diagnosed with the MPN blood cancer, originally called essential thrombocythemia, which is too many platelets in the blood, and it can progress to a secondary stage called myelofibrosis. And unfortunately, he did progress to myelofibrosis. And so in 2017, after being involved with the Canadian MPN Network, the patient advocacy group in which we had started was a group of Canadians who have been diagnosed with this rare blood cancer. I felt it was an opportune time to look at helping with research and research projects here in Canada dedicated to the MPN blood cancer.
So, when you say it's a rare blood cancer, do you know about how many people are affected?
Yeah, approximately 4 in 100,000, or, you know, roughly about 1 or 2% of the Canadian population. However, I can tell you that while it is considered a rare disease, what we're seeing is that it is more undiagnosed rather than where it's leading to be looked at as being more undiagnosed than a rare disease. We're finding with better diagnostic tools that doctors have at their disposal that they're finding more people who have either polycythemia vera or essential thrombocythemia, the two precursor conditions within the myeloproliferative neoplasm blood cancer. So while it does affect, you know, a smaller amount of the Canadian population, certainly we are seeing that there are more patients being diagnosed with the two precursor conditions.
So, how does the network go about reaching out to the patient community and to researchers as well?
Absolutely. So Canadian MPN Network, which is the patient advocacy group, you know, really we try and find patients where we can. We have support groups set up over in most major cities over across Canada. So, you know, all the way from Vancouver to Calgary, Edmonton. We've got a couple of smaller groups, Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We've got a very large group in Hamilton. We've got a smaller group in Barrie, Ontario. So, you know, we've got Quebec. We've got a large group in Quebec, a support group in Quebec, and one out in Halifax. So, you know, we're spread across the country, and really it's by getting our information out, connecting with patients that we know about, connecting through our doctor community as well by giving them the information about the support groups. But we really try and reach out to patients through those efforts. And, you know, as far as the Research Foundation, the Canadian MPN Research Foundation, we work closely with our Canadian MPN physicians, so the hematologists that deal with this blood cancer. We work closely with them and try and work together with regards to research projects and driving research initiatives here in Canada. So we work closely with both sides, I want to say, in the community, the patient community and the patient advocacy group, as well as the physician community, the MPN physician community.
So in terms of patient advocacy, do you provide any supports for someone who might be struggling with a new diagnosis, wondering how to cope?
Absolutely. So, you know, our support groups are there to help educate and assist and provide patients with hope, inspiration, and knowledge. So providing them the guidance and the background on the disease to help them navigate their journey. Absolutely, we're there to support the patient community in all facets, whether that be questions that they might want to ask their doctor or that they don't know how to ask their doctor about regarding the disease, and also the psychosocial support that patients need when they get diagnosed with a rare incurable blood cancer. There's lots of questions they'll have, and when they leave their doctor's office with that initial diagnosis, we provide them with a lot of information that they can utilize. We're always updating our patient education information so that when they go home and they sit down and they have time to think about that the diagnosis that they've been given, they can then read or digitally read the information that we've provided to them, and also that their family members, I call it their ecosystem, so that their patient ecosystem has that same information so they can help their patient navigate their journey and absorb the information about a diagnosis that they've just received. So most definitely, we do support our patient community in supporting them not only with the information about the disease, from a layman's term, not a medical perspective, but also from the psychosocial aspect of being diagnosed with a rare incurable blood cancer.
So in your time with the network, has there been any success moment you've experienced that stands out for you?
Absolutely. You know, I want to say from the time that the Canadian MPN Network Patient Advocacy Group was formulated back in 2014, there's been lots of successes. I think every time we established a new support group in another Canadian city, that's a huge success. We've had national conferences where we've had international MPN doctors come and speak at. We've created new initiatives in patient education. Those have all been great initiatives that I would deem success. And our most recent for the Canadian MPN Research Foundation is we're in the process of launching a patient app, so a quality of life tracking tool whereby patients will be able to track their quality of life on a weekly or daily basis. They can share that information with their physician, with their MPN physician. And, you know, the research community is going to be able to see some of this data in an aggregated and anonymized way so that they can look at new research projects. And really, this is so important in the entire MPN community for patients to be able to track their quality of life, and for their doctors to see longitudinal quality of life so they can utilize that information in their ongoing treatment and diagnosis. So, you know, there's been lots of successes, and, you know, I think this is just the start of our successes for our patient community, our physician community, and our research community. But I would have to say some of those are some of the highlights.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health or addiction, consider registering to the new REACT program launched by Downtown Windsor Community Collaborative. REACT is a 90-day program committed to understanding your story and supporting your journey to healthy and long-term healing. All sessions are online and completely free, running weekdays from 9 a.m. until noon. Visit reactwindsor.ca and instantly be connected to a safe and supportive community. That's reactwindsor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about MPN from Cheryl Petrug, and Christine Payne gave us an update on CFPDP. This next segment of our show, we're going to hear a little bit about parasport advocacy from Claire Buchanan. So, can you tell me a little bit about your parasport advocacy efforts?
Absolutely. I was in the States for a few years on a wheelchair basketball athletic scholarship, and when I came back from the States, sledge hockey was the first sport I ever tried as a kid. I started playing at the age of 12, and coming back and hearing that while I was in the States that the women's national team was forming, and that there was an option for female para ice hockey players to play the sport and have a path to being on a national team blew my mind. And even to this day, right now, we are having to do as much as we can and fight as hard as we can to get the representation and get more girls in the sport, because that, at the end of the day, there isn't enough girls and women playing the sport to have other international teams represented. And at the end of the day, we want the game in the Paralympics, and Canada and the U.S. have great programs, and we do a lot of advocacy, not only just in Canada, but worldwide to grow the game. And at the end of the day, like conversations like this, that's what it's all about, is just getting the word out there that it's the sport exists.
So you mentioned there aren't enough girls and women in the game. What do you think are some of the roadblocks that would keep them from getting out there and trying?
Exposure, for one. Yeah, like I said, I recently this week I did an event with the City of Toronto, and they're wanting to help push more advocacy and more representation of parasports as well. And there just isn't that knowledge that parasports exist, and that it's not just for disabled people. Especially a sport like para hockey, able-bodied individuals can play the sport alongside their disabled friends or family members. So the beautiful thing about it is that if there's a kid in a small town that has a disability but wants to find a sport, that the people in their community can kind of rally around them and form a team and get an organization going, or find an organization that's close by. The next thing would be equipment. A lot of the organizations do have extra sleds and sticks that new players can get in and try it out. But individually, it's compared to able-bodied sports, we still have to buy all of the same hockey equipment. We still have to spend money on pads and skate boots to protect our feet. But there's this extra cost of the actual sled, which ranges anywhere from $700 to $1,500. So I think that's a big barrier of, you already have to buy the same amount of equipment that able-bodied players are buying, but there's this extra added-on cost that could make it very hard for families or individuals to want to get into the sport.
So, to look at the converse side of things, what are some of the benefits that an athlete with a disability might enjoy by being part of the sport? being part of a team as well.
That's exactly it. You are brought into a community of people that maybe not have had the same experiences that you have had, but have had similar ones. I know for me, finding a community that understood my disability and understood what my life looks like on a day-to-day basis, like that is just a big breath that you can kind of take as at any age, whether you start the sport at a very young age. There's some kids that start as young as 5 or 6, and that's incredible. But there's also people that start the sport that have acquired an injury late in life as an adult, and you kind of feel like you've been kind of taken out of your normal group of people and stuff like that. So to find other people that can kind of understand you as an individual is huge. And I mean, sport for anybody at any age it'll increase your quality of life. You get to make new friends and learn life skills like being active and communicating and treating your body in a healthy way and just being able to grow long-lasting relationships.
So in your time with Parasport, has there been any success moment you've experienced that stands out for you?
I honestly, I remember my very first selection camp for the women's national team. Like I said, I started playing the sport at 12, but when I went to the States for 6 or 7 years, I didn't play sledge hockey. I was playing wheelchair basketball, and coming back into the sport, it was only a few months. I got a sled, and I was on the ice as much as I could, and it was one of my worst selection camps, but I got noticed as one of the athletes that was going to work hard and not give up on my team and kind of put everything that I can into not just the sport, but like we're doing right now. At the end of the day, I'm going to stop playing at some point, and I want to be able to make a path for the next generation where they only have to focus on being an athlete. We're fighting very hard to get the representation for the sport and the women's side of it specifically. And honestly, anytime I see a new girl come on the ice or see us for the first time and see that there's an option for them to, hey, I want to be on the national team and this is what I want to do, that there isn't honestly one thing or one time. It's consistently over and over again where I see this like light in the next generation that I'm just really excited about.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
I love hearing stories about athletes with disabilities playing alongside their able-bodied counterparts. What better way to learn about another type of person, to be engaged in common cause? Because in that moment, you're not just part of a team, you're part of a greater community. For someone with a disability, be counted as an equal, included as an equal, they might find that voice that can be so elusive, that self-respect that should be in all facets of life. When it comes to disability sport, it's this wonderful tendency to allow persons with disabilities to find that strength in other areas. This is something we should all encourage. The fact is, person can always achieve their best if they believe that there is a next level, there is something more they can accomplish. And working together in common cause brings them one step closer to this. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.